The Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio, heard weekdays from noon to 1. I'm John Williams. We appreciate you tuning in. You know, I'm on from 9 to noon, and we get questions and comments and observations in the morning that we like to sometimes bring back to the Business Lunch and answer them here. Just a couple of texts that came in during the show. John, $1.79, Union Grove, Wisconsin, for masks. We were talking about masks and your ability to get them. 773 said, Miller Industrial Hardware in Elk Grove Village has surgical masks and the KN95 mask and hand sanitizer. John, unemployment. If the applicant puts in the wrong birth date and social security number, one of our listeners did. He asked us what options there were because he couldn't find an edit function at the IDES website. It cannot be fixed online. The applicant needs to phone IDES. This was on the news last night. That may have been on the news last night, but they ain't answering the phones very well during the day. Another listener said, simply start all over again, pretend that didn't happen, and get it right the second time, and that will work. It did for one of our listeners. And then this one. John, my wife and I own a retail business in Sycamore. We are preparing to follow the orders so that we can reopen. That is, I presume, curbside pickup for a retail establishment. We just bought one-time use masks to give to everyone who wants to shop. Now, this one step we are taking for customers and employees to be safe, signed Rich. Rich, you're on WGN. We called him back to find out a little bit more about how a retail establishment is doing this. Hey, Rich, you're on the air. How are you?
I'm good, John. Healthy so far. Thank you.
Sweet Earth Gifts and Jewelry in downtown Sycamore, right?
Yes, that's our name, yes.
So my understanding is, though, Rich, while the governor is relaxing these things at the end of the month, people won't be able to come into your store. They'll order over the phone or online, and you would hand it to them at the front of the store. Is that the way you expect you'll do it?
Yes. Of course, we have been off since, I think, March 20th. We haven't been open. And we've been following those orders, and we are now starting to prepare for what could happen in the future, of course, when we do reopen. At this point, the curbside thing, we are going to start that up. I think it was May 1st,
yeah.
And we're going to do everything we can to get some income going in our store. But we want to be prepared. If the order is, let's say, in the next 2 weeks, we can open our store. We want to make sure we are prepared.
And that's that was a frustration for our listeners. Pardon me. Go ahead, Rich.
We have prepared, and we just obtained a few hundred masks. They're a one-time use. Or throwaway, and it would at least allow people to come into our store and shop and feel safe, and for our safety and for our employee safety also.
Yeah, and that might be after May 1st, but who knows? Maybe you get lucky and the thing goes well. Either way, you're going to need those masks. Where did you get those, and how much did they cost you?
It was a local vendor. I can't remember the exact name of them. My wife actually got them, my business partner, Roseanne, and she was able to get a few hundred of these disposables. And right now we're getting a lot of information from our vendors that they are starting to sell masks, all different kinds. I mean, you can find them from $1.25 a piece all the way up to $5 each.
Or six or
but
seven.
But these disposable ones would be something we can actually give away. I don't have to sell them to a person who's going to come into our store.
So at your store then, Sweet Earth Gifts and Jewelry, downtown Sycamore. Just a last question for you, Rich. Since soon people will be able to reach out to you, order stuff, and at least pick it up, what should we think about shopping for in Sycamore at your store? What have you got?
Oh, gosh. Well, we're a boutique-style department store. We have everything from jewelry and apparel, some women's apparel. We do seasonal home decor, basic cards, all types of Hallmark cards, and just a lot of different things we hand-select throughout the whole year. and toys, a big selection of Melissa and Doug toys.
Those are the kind of shops that everybody really misses. You miss your downtown. You miss places like this. It's good to hear you, Rich. Good luck to you. Sweet Earth Gifts and Jewelry in downtown Sycamore is going to be ready with masks for customers when they come in and employees when they're handing stuff out. I wish you well. Thanks for your time, Rich.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Jen.
Yeah, who knew? As a retailer, you got to start thinking about stuff like that. They are. Greg McBride joins us from Bankrate.com. He's the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Analyst there. Greg, welcome back to the show. Trust that you're well today.
Good afternoon, John. Happy Friday. Yes, things are good. I hope the same is for you and yours.
It is. Let's talk, though, about folks who are now suddenly finding themselves going paycheck to paycheck. You guys are writing a little bit about this, the salary cuts that people are living with. Maybe you're working, but you're making less money. Maybe you're not working at all. Now it's a paycheck to paycheck world for whom? What are you seeing about that?
Well, you know, there was a survey that put out today, I think by Associated Press, had put it out. Somebody, almost half of American households have seen some form of income disruption. Of course, 26 million people have filed for unemployment just in the last 5 weeks. But we're also seeing instances where people that are still working, but because business is down so sharply, they're not generating the commissions that they were, they're not getting the hours that they were, the overtime they had been getting is a distant memory. And so, this is something that's having a ripple effect on more than just those that have been laid off or furloughed. Even those that may still be working, may be working for a lot less than they had been just a few months ago.
I know this is easier said than done, and especially easier for some people than others, but we have to change our savings culture in this country, Greg.
You took the words right out of my mouth. It's been sort of my mission in life is to do my part on that, get people to think about saving differently. I think this set of circumstances that we're all thrust into now is not only evidence as of why we need to, but I hope, if there's going to be a positive to eventually come out of this, that maybe that's the impact as it pertains to people's personal finances, is that it does motivate or generate an actual change. In the financial crisis, we did see a change of attitude. People recognized how important emergency saving was. They realized they didn't have enough, and they weren't feeling good about it. So we saw big shifts on all of those. What we didn't see a big shift on was the actual amount people had saved. Stagnant incomes, prolonged long-term unemployment, really stood in the way, were real obstacles to people accumulating a savings cushion throughout that 11-year economic expansion. And so the reality of it is, coming into 2020, from a savings standpoint, a lot of households were no better off than they had been in 2010. Even back in January, which seems like light years ago at this point, just 41% of American households could pay for an unplanned $1,000 expense out of their savings. And that was when things were good. That's when unemployment was at a 50-year low. Obviously, things have changed dramatically and in a way none of us could have imagined just in the few months since.
Then and now, people have been dragging a lot of debt on credit cards and obviously student loans. We frequently talk about that next generation of wage earners who graduate with burdensome loans. I don't know what the solution is to that. Some of us in principle don't like debt forgiveness just because you borrowed a lot of money, but I don't know exactly how we escape that or what we should learn from this and how do we get around that in the future.
Debt is an issue, has been an issue. People point to student loan debt. But there's over $1 trillion worth of credit card debt. There's over $1 trillion worth of auto loan debt. The average amount financed on a new car is $31,000. That's $600 a month, even at a low interest rate. So, debt has, I think, manifests itself in a lot of different ways. Fortunately, in a time like this, we are seeing the type of payment relief options that, you know, would are normally limited to an area that's been impacted by a natural disaster, for example. You know, now those are available to anybody that's been impacted by the pandemic. Your mortgage, your car loan, your credit cards, your student loans, you have the ability to, you know, forbear on your payments. Your federal student loans, not only do you have the ability to you know, automatically stop making the payments until September, but all interest is waived. So that's on the, you know, on the one hand, it's great payment relief. On the other hand, if you're still working, it's a great opportunity to hammer down that balance, because between now and September, every dollar you put toward it is going directly towards the principal. For those that are experiencing financial disruptions, getting payment relief on your mortgage and your car loan and even your credit cards can really create a lot of valuable breathing room in the budget, so that you can focus on the day-to-day essentials with what is likely to be a very limited amount of money that's coming in, be it from unemployment, severance, or whatever the case may be.
You said the average car loan is $31,000, $600 a month. I presume that's over the life of the loan, $31,000. That's not the purchase price of the car, right?
No, that is the amount financed on an on the average new car. And so that, you know, is indicative of a couple of things. You know, people have favored trucks and SUVs much more so than cars. In recent years, that's pushed that amount up. The other thing is what's called the negative equity trade. In other words, you trade in a car after a few years when you still owe more than what the trade-in is worth. That negative difference oftentimes gets rolled into the new loan, and so the problem snowballs if you're in the habit of trading in vehicles on a regular basis. And so we've seen these numbers working their way up over time. Even at a time when interest rates were going down, we still saw the amount being financed going up and up, and the corresponding payments that go along with it.
Well, that explains it, because my guess was that the average new car purchase was less than 31K, but if I'm paying off one and a half cars with the new loan, then that gets me over the second car purchase price. Would you say, too, though, that you were talking about savings rates and people living paycheck to paycheck. Is that happening across all income strata, or is it just in certain sectors?
We do see it across all incomes. You know, the old adage, the more you make, the more you spend, is very true. A lot of high-income households, just they burn through it all. Some of the best savings habits we actually see are in middle-income ranges. You know, households with income between $30,000 and $50,000 a year, actually the best savers in terms of what percentage of income they're putting away, much more so than groups that have higher levels of income. So just illustrates that successful saving is all about the habit. It's not a function of how much you make. Yes, if you have good habits, the more you make, the more you can save. But if you don't have good habits, it doesn't matter how much you make. You're not going to be putting that money away. We see plenty of evidence of that. So, you know, that importance of saving first, having a direct deposit from your paycheck into a dedicated savings account, those type of things. You know, even right now, you know, those stimulus checks that people have received, if you're still working, that can be valuable cushion. We don't really know what lies ahead over the next 3, 6, 9 months, having that extra little money put away. You know, the money that isn't being spent going out to restaurants, concerts, or Cubs games is money that we could be putting into savings as well, just to kind of pad that cushion, not knowing what's ahead. So I think, you know, if you're looking for opportunities, those that are still working can, you know, really make hay while the sun shines and put some more money away during these times when we're otherwise sheltered in place and not spending as much or in the same way as we traditionally would be.
We're talking to Greg McBride. He's a Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. Markets are up slightly. It's 12:26 on WGN. We'll get to the news in about 4 minutes and another market update. A lot of folks, though, are waiting for their unemployment checks. Lord knows this has been a clogged system in Springfield and maybe across the country. But millions of folks, my understanding is, still have not received their first unemployment compensation check.
Yes, and I'm in Florida, and the system is a complete morass. You know, that's, I don't know anybody that has gotten any money yet. And I know people that filed for unemployment in the first 2 weeks of March, and they're still waiting on their first dime. So, yes, this is a problem that seems to be worse in some areas than others. But, at the point where people are most in need of that money, whether it's bureaucracy, technology issues, whatever, that money is not getting to people as they need it. Eventually it'll come and it'll be retroactive, but if you're falling behind on bills right now, if you're running up debt, that's little consolation that, oh, don't worry, the money was on its way. The check is in the mail, as they say.
One last question. I wonder if the credit reporting agencies are going to factor in the fact that if your credit score is taking a hit because of mispayments right now, it's not because you are a bad credit risk, but because we had a pandemic. Do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Well, first, that's the reason why you really want to seek out forbearance and other payment relief options with your lender, is because when you go that route, your payments are not reported as being late or delinquent. So, it's really a twofer. You get the payment relief and without any corresponding damage to your credit. If, on the other hand, you kind of run the other way and the lender has to track you down to get your payments later, that's where you really do a lot of damage to your credit score. So, I think first and foremost, if you're having any type of financial difficulty, seek out that payment relief. As to your broader question, yes, I do think that credit scoring models will ultimately have a different weighting factor as it pertains to 2020. People that were good credit risks up until a pandemic created a forced economic shutdown, I think that the credit scoring models are certainly going to have to take that into account. People are really good about making the payments when they have a steady income, but when somebody turns out the lights and tells us all to stay home, that changes things dramatically, and the credit scoring models ultimately are going to have to account for that.
Credit scoring models, that's an interesting concept, isn't it? Do you know how those work? One missed payment costs me 50 points. Is there some model literally like that?
It's a variety of different. You don't just have one credit score. There's different credit scores for different types of loans, for example. The makeup might be a little bit different for, say, a mortgage loan than, say, the score that your car loan or your credit card issuer is pulling. But generally, about 40 to 45% is payment history. And then you have about another 30% is the amount of your available credit that you're using. So right there, that two-thirds of your credit score comes from making your payments on time and how much debt you have relative to your available credit. If you're paying down your balances, that works definitely to your advantage. To a smaller extent, other factors that come into play are the length of credit history, recent credit inquiries that you've had, and the mix of credit. Somebody who's been able to demonstrate good credit behavior, right, on multiple different types of credit, they get a boost for that.
$600 a month, $31,000 a car, new car debt that we finance. Amazing. Lots of fascinating and somewhat discouraging, but maybe ultimately hopeful facts and ideas from Greg. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, John.
Greg McBride is the Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Analyst at Bankrate.com. 1234, this is WGN. John Williams here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Tom Gimbel is our next guest, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. It's a staffing, recruiting, and culture firm. And the questions today are about what the future is like for businesses inside those businesses. Tom, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing great, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. The governor here in Illinois says, of course, maybe we could allow curbside pickup, but that's not really where we want to be. We want to have businesses restaffed, people back in offices, retail stores doing their business. And you're thinking a little bit about what the future looks like in offices and buildings everywhere, I guess, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot more that goes into it than just flipping the switch, whether it be May 30th, June 30th, whenever it's going to be. There's so much more that goes into it. I mean, think about the building you guys are in for WGN Radio. How many floors are there? How many offices are there? How long will it take if only one person can be in an elevator at a time to fill up offices. So you're talking about, even when the switch is turned on, that the access to people getting to work on public transportation and then getting into a building, whether they're shared kitchens, going into restaurants to eat, where people feel comfortable, there's a lot more to reentry than there actually was going to the quarantine work from home.
Have you been in an elevator lately?
I have been. I go into the office occasionally, but there's a handful of people in my building. And so right now, there's no one in there, and it's easy. But yeah. When you have, even at 50% of a building being full, to get people up there is still going to be an effort.
I suppose if they say it's okay to go back to work now, that it'll be okay to be in a crowded elevator now, but maybe not. Maybe they'll limit the capacity. I have been in an elevator with two or three people the last few weeks on rare occasion, but as you said, I'm working downtown, and there are still some construction people and other offices being maintained. And when you are in an elevator with three people, all three corners are taken, and there's a little bit of a sideways glance about, are we cool with this? Because we're nervous, but the businesses aren't open up now. I wonder when they open them back up, quote unquote, how comfortable people are going to feel in those elevators, Tom.
Well, and that's really going to be the challenge. It's not only that, John. It's if you're within a mile of your office, you can walk to work or what have you, or even take an Uber and there's only two people in the car. But you're coming from, in Chicago, you're coming from Wrigleyville, or you're coming from the suburbs, or Rogers Park, or South Shore, and you're on the train, which aren't the cleanest things in the world to begin with. There's just a lot of fear and apprehension. So then you have people saying, can we still work from home and how the shifts are, which really, John, results into a much bigger issue, and that is if everything is going to be remote work for a while, or even shifts, then companies are going to look at their labor force, and they're going to wonder, do we have to have people who even live in the Chicagoland area if they're working remote? Why don't I get a cheaper person who lives in Montana versus somebody who lives in Chicago?
Yeah, or India. So if I was a business, if I was a manager, I wonder if I should be thinking about how close the desks are. We've got a sales suite here, and people are elbow to elbow. They have their own cubicles, but they're very near each other. I wonder if that's something everybody should start to think about right now.
Every company already is, John, whether it's the C-level or human resources or operational people of, do we need to get plexiglass? There's also in between desks. Are we going to have people go every other desk and do shifts, at least 50% on one week, 50% coming into the office the next week? And then the thing that it's kind of funny, but it's serious, is are there going to be shifts and signups for going to the bathroom? Meaning, can you have three people going to the bathroom, especially guys with urinals, not stalls, washing hands at the bathroom, breathing on each other? And how many people do you see who brush their teeth at work in the men's room or the ladies' room? And that won't be permissible anymore. So there's so many little ancillary issues to just going back into the office that companies are grappling with right now, and how to roll that out is really a challenge.
Is it necessarily a bad thing if, in fact, offices aren't ever full like they are now? If people are using, Skype or Zoom and are working from home or working around the country, is that necessarily going to be a bad thing, Tom?
Well, what we're battling with, John, is what is necessary for business and then what is necessary for the human spirit. And I believe that a lot of workers, and I'm an old school person, but I believe, and this is really showing here, is that people need the interaction, not just virtually and video and voice, but they need the touch, they need the high five, they need the fist bump. You need to be in a room with a whiteboard and do that, not because it's necessarily always the most efficient, which I believe it is, but even more so because the human connection of being close to people, and that invigorates people to do more and to see it, and the energy and the smile. That's what we're missing more than anything else. And so I don't think people are going to want to work remote for forever after this. I think there's actually going to be a pushback to people wanting to get in the office.
you know, so much of what we do here and probably every business requires some collaboration and sometimes spontaneous collaboration. I bump into somebody in the newsroom. A producer says, I heard that Anna was going to do this. And a news guy says, yeah, I've got an article or I have a soundbite. And that's how we do what we do. And it's probably that way with many industries where you sort of need those organic connections that you're not going to get just by Zoom appointment, right?
100%. And then take it a step further from the business collaboration. How about my wife has this, my husband that, my kid, my parent, my friend. Oh, I can help him with that. I can introduce him to this.
Yeah.
That water cooler gossip conversation that leads to three steps down the road and helping people is lost. And then even go a step further, John, I've got a young company where 80% of my folks are under 30 years old. We hire a lot of kids out of college. A lot of them have become roommates. Their social life originates from that. If you go all remote and virtually, you lose a lot of friendships and social collaboration that wouldn't exist otherwise. So there are a lot of extra steps that are really missing right now.
All the more reason to leave the home and get back in the office. Interesting stuff.
I think so.
Yeah, Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. Tom, I appreciate your expertise. Thanks for your time today.
Good to be with you, John. Stay healthy, will you?
Likewise. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute. This is WGN.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Crane says Northwestern Medicine is enrolling patients in a global clinical trial for hospitalized patients who are severely ill with COVID-19. They're using a drug that is currently used as a treatment option for adults with rheumatoid arthritis. Health Champion, a Chicago startup that wants to make it easier to view and manage personal medical records, is acquiring another local tech company that specializes in custom software development. Chicago Inno says Health Champion is purchasing Alligatorek. And JCPenney is in advanced talks for bankruptcy funding with the group of lenders. A sign the retailer is about to collapse under the weight of the coronavirus pandemic. I'm Steve Bertrand. That's the Wintrust Business Minute.
I'm rooting for a green screen, Steve Bertrand.
It's greener than it was. The Dow's up 53 points, NASDAQ 65, and the S&P 500 up 14.
Orion Samuelson's just down the way. Orion, what's news in agribusiness?
Look at some of the new financial side of the agricultural business. Analysts released by the National Corn Growers Association yesterday showed that cash corn prices have dropped by 16% on average, with several regions experiencing declines of more than 20%. That happening since the 1st of March as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. The analysis projected a $50 per acre revenue decline for the 2019 corn crop. The COVID-19 pandemic is being felt across all sectors of our economy. According to the Corn Growers President Kevin Ross, the analysis clearly illustrates its impact on corn growers and will be beneficial as we work to ensure they have the resources needed to navigate these very difficult times for producers of every food item. A story out of Columbia, Missouri, has pointed out that over 200,000 Missouri residents have filed for unemployment since March 20th, and egg producers have certainly been impacted because the demand is so high for eggs, they're struggling to keep up. Before COVID-19 shaped our new reality, 55% of eggs nationally went to retail. Now, 80% of all eggs are going to the grocery store. And the Missouri Egg Council says that reflects the change in how egg producers are operating until restaurants and schools are able to reopen. Hardly a segment of our agricultural industry or food industry has not been affected by COVID-19 in how they market, where they market, and where they find the greatest demand for eggs, for example. Ben Roberts, who operates Ben Roberts Heritage Poultry and Eggs in Fortuna, Missouri, said he's also seen an increase in demand. He's been selling eggs for 45 years, and he said, it's been the best thing to ever happen to me. That's your money on 720 WGN.
1247 WGN, what are your weekend plans? You know, there's this virus and the weather's not going to be great in Chicago. Maybe this would be one way to spend some of your time doing a puzzle, building a model. I saw the other day that puzzles were sold out on websites. You could not get a, you know, picture puzzle, 500 pieces to put together. You know who's also actually having a pretty good sales spike right now are the people that make those toy models that maybe you put together as a kid, maybe that your kids put together now, or maybe that you want to do now as an adult. Revell USA is actually selling a lot more models. The president of that company is Lou Aguilera, and he joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Lou, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon.
Are you guys in Chicago? Are you based in Chicago? What's the Chicago connection for Revell?
We are. We're out in the northwest suburbs.
Have you always been? Is this a Chicago-grown business and company?
Revell started actually in Venice, California, and moved here in the 80s when they merged with Monogram Models, and Monogram was based out of Morton Grove. So two companies came together in the 80s.
Got it. Talk to me a little bit about sales. I understand business is good. Just tell me what's happening.
Yeah, so we certainly saw, you know, an increase or a spike, if you will, at the stores. Store POS was up about a week just before all of the stay-at-home directives were put in place. As you remember, schools were being dismissed before the official state directives were put in place. And it seems that parents were out looking for something to do, and we certainly saw a sales increase at that time. And subsequent to that, as we went into the late March and into April, as well, all of our online sales, we saw spikes there as well. And those have continued into April here.
Yeah, well, that's my next question. So though you can't buy it in a store, people are going online, and sales are still pretty good. What are you selling? What kind of models are we talking about here?
So anywhere from, you know, models that children can put together that don't require any paint or glue, and they snap together, very easy, simple assembly, starting at ages 5 and up. That's our junior kit and our Snap-Tite build and play. Then we have just traditional models where you do need paint and glue. And across the board, we're seeing sales increases in all categories. So to me, it says, you know, we've got kids at home building as well as you mentioned. You know, we've got adults as well that are probably spending some time doing this.
Oh, you're talking to an adult right now who really wants to do this again for the first time in decades. I want to get the glue out. I want to get the X-Acto knife or whatever that is. I want to get the paint out. I'll need a fan. I don't want to, you know, fumigate myself. And I want to kill some time doing that. My recollection is that I wasn't as good at it as the picture in the model. I did it, and I loved it. And every now and then, I'd have a B-17 or a Camaro put together, a battleship. Boy, I had a great battleship with the red paint along the hull. And I guess it's almost a skill. Probably the more you do it, the better you get at it. Huh, Lou?
That's for sure. And you know, we've evolved over the years now that there are enough challenging models that we have in our line that don't require paint, for example, and don't require a lot of glue, maybe one or two parts, but it's intended to primarily be put together without any glue. So, for example, we have a Titanic. This has 156 pieces, and you don't have to paint it. You don't have to glue it. But if you want to, you want to weather it, you want to go that extra mile, you have that option. And of course, we still have the classics in our line, like the B-17. My son actually built a B-17 just a few weeks ago. He had the glue out and the paint out. And that's evolved as well. We've got glue applicators that are very precision applicators, very precise, right? So that you don't have to get it on your fingers. That was my history as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Me too. Well, in fact, your company sent some to us here at WGN Radio. I was showing it to members of the staff. So I have the 2017 Ford GT in the Snap-Tite line. I've got the Lightning McQueen. This looks like from a movie, right?
That's correct.
I've got the Star Wars Millennium Falcon, and we have Halo. This is the UNSC Warthog, so it's a military craft, a vehicle. These are all snapped together, huh? So for kids, I guess.
Those are all snapped together, exactly, and there are different levels of difficulty there. So, for example, the Millennium Falcon, that's really designed for a six-year-old, and it can be snapped together. The plastic is much more durable, so that once the child is done building it, they can play with it. If they drop it, it's not going to break, and it has lights and sounds included in it. The same thing with the Halo model, that as well has lights and sounds, very durable materials. That one comes with action figures as well. So there's play involved after you're done building. Then as you go up into the Lightning McQueen that you mentioned, that's a little bit more of a display model. That one does have parts on trees, and so it is a little bit more tedious, but still really intended for kids or the movie fan, right?
Lou Aguilera is on a phone line, the president of Revell. So what's the future for your company? Do you wonder, hey, we're introducing our product to a lot of new people right now, and how do we capitalize upon this? What's the corporate thinking from you, Lou?
Yeah, that's certainly our goal, is to, you know, keep getting models in front of kids. That's why we've expanded our line to be more simplified, if you will, for those five-year-olds, six-year-olds, and get them engaged in model building. You know, there's lots of benefits that children receive from building models. We know, obviously, a lot of children are out there building Legos. And, you know, we believe that model building is really an extension of that and adds to that whole experience of creating something with your hands and being proud of what you've done and what you've accomplished. So, you know, we're certainly looking to bring more children into model building and grow our business from that perspective. And then we're constantly looking at our product line and how can we have subject matter that is more relevant for today's children, so such as Star Wars, Halo, we have Scooby-Doo, Lightning McQueen, and then also different kinds of product applications, so that we get away from the paint and glue for those younger ages. But then when you look at somebody like my son, he started with those when he was 6 years old, and now he's 11, and now he's building models with paint and glue. So there is a progression.
I'm thinking of a plastic red ball. This is a model you can make, and then it's got all of these spikes sticking out of it. It's the coronavirus.
I actually have a graphic of a mock-up box that some people in the office were joking around saying, yeah, this could be an interesting model.
By the way, so I don't know that that's such a crazy idea. If you wanted to do microbes, amoebas, organs of the human body, the brain, I don't know what you would do, but I wonder if, aside from all of this, that's not an area. And I also wonder if you think about little girls as much as you think about little boys when you're designing models.
For sure. And you know, in our history, boy, we've got thousands and thousands of products. And in our history, we have had visible woman. So you did half of the body, you could see the organs, and you would actually assemble it and put together the organs and learn from that perspective. We did have a line of horses that was certainly of interest for girls, but we also see that girls are interested in some of the things that we're doing, such as Star Wars and Lightning McQueen, and some of those subject matters are of interest to them as well.
Can you tell me about sales generally? You said they were up. Do you have numbers? Do you have gross numbers? Millions of dollars? How many employees?
Well, percentage-wise, we were up 92% POS. So at the store registers were bringing in about 92% more week over week as we led into the stay-at-home directives. And then our internet business was up 75 to 85%. March was up compared to January and February, and compared to last year, we're up over 100%.
How many people do you all employ?
You know, we're a pretty small company here in the U.S. You know, we're more of a distribution arm, if you will, in the U.S. And then we also work very closely. Our parent company is actually in Germany. So total, we're probably about 150 employees in total.
If I want to order a model, where do I go, Lou?
Well, definitely Amazon. You know, Amazon, you'll find all kinds of products there. If you want to get more specific and maybe even have a wider breadth of selection, there are websites like megahobby.com and also towerhobbies.com.
Well, congratulations on maybe anticipating this. When it first broke out, you said sales were good, and maybe who knows what the future is for Revell, but it's good to hear about a company in the area that is doing well. Lou Aguilera is the president of Revell. Nice to talk to you, Lou.
Thank you. Likewise.
Yeah, have a good weekend. You know what I'm going to do?